Now I would like to introduce our speaker today, Julianne Hart, who is a fairly new member. She is a native Oregonian, grew up in Portland. She's been writing poetry since she was 20, and she's worked in the backyard bird shop for 23 years. She's a hiker and mountain climber, and on her 60th birthday, she climbed Mount St. Helens. Julianne.
Thank you. Good morning. A while ago, I read an article by author Amy Bloom. She wrote, "Good fiction will pass the time. Great fiction will take you to another place. But poetry is the thing that will take you inside yourself and hand you back a piece of your soul." Being a poet, that inspired me to start sharing my poetry again. I put together some collections, and this reading is called Poetry is Food for the Soul. A few months ago at a garage sale, I picked up a book by Ralph Waldo Emerson. It was a collection of essays and poetry. Perfect timing. I had just been talking to a friend about starting a poetry club, like a book club, but you read and discuss poetry instead. In the book, I found out that Emerson had become a Unitarian minister. 5 years later, he began a new career as a public lecturer, and at the age of 43, he published his first book of poetry. In reading Emerson, he had a lot to say about poets and poetry. Of poets, he says, "It is not the meter, but a meter-making argument that makes a poem. A thought so passionate and alive that, like the spirit of a plant or animal, it has an architecture of its own and adorns nature with a new thing, a new thought. He has a whole new experience to unfold. He tells us how it was with him, and all men will be the richer." Several years ago, on a sunny spring day, I was out in my garden watching the daffodils. That moment inspired this. The trumpet calls. The yellow ruffled trumpet calls, voice brighter than the sun, announcing yet another year from whence the ground they've come. On such a tiny body sits, like mighty heads on little men. Yet they remember more than we what life's bestowed on them. In playful wind that's bobbed about, still firm and fixed they stand. When gathered, they lose not themselves as does a mortal man. But say again and yet again, remember what we've done. Behold, rejoice and see in us, out of the ground we've come. Emerson writes, "The world exists for the education of each man. There is no age or state or society or mode of action in history in which there is not somewhat corresponding in his life. He must transfer the point of view from which history is commonly read to himself and not deny his convictions. He must attain and maintain that lofty sight where facts yield secret sense." Oregon has a lot of history and special places. My family settled here in the 1860s. Growing up, I'd heard about Celilo Falls, the Native American fishing grounds, and nearby the petroglyphs, especially the one called She Who Watches. One weekend, my boyfriend at the time, Roy, and I were on a road trip up the Columbia Gorge to Maryhill Museum. I was moved by the beauty and history of the area. I could feel the sadness. Celilo Falls. Water flowing, fast, fast, past rocks, past here. A way of life for her. In a cloudless sky, the endless wind blows, and the sun upon the bare hills glows. Dig, 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 echoed off the soil as she toiled. Like the lone bird's song, she belonged. The earth broke, and the sound revealed what lay hidden in the ground concealed. She stopped, raised her hand into the air, pointed to the water there. I turned to watch the water rise, as in my eyes. What comes, what goes, the woman who watches knows. I looked back to the hills to her, but she was gone. A sadness grew. I knew. As the wind blew, I heard it say, today they took the falls away. Silence fills the empty space. A tree here or there takes the place where once the river raced. Digging roots have gone away. Sacrificed, still water stays. The woman who watches knows what comes, what goes. With what joy I begin to read a poem which I confide in as an inspiration, says Emerson. And now my chains are to be broken. I shall mount above these clouds and opaque airs in which I live, and from the heavens of truth I shall see and comprehend my relations. I sometimes get the inspiration for a poem from a dream. Not the wispy kind that break apart the moment you wake up, but the vivid dreams that seem to have a life of their own. Bird of Prey, P-R-A-Y. How powerful they look this morn, poised upon my gloved hand. Thy eyes are keen, thy feathers sleek. Another dawn begins the day, now to flight, my bird of prey. And as thou into the heavens soar, a thought to mind draws me away. What be that visitation in the night? Your cry doth call me in my sleep. The sound chills my bones. The pain doth make me weep. I search for thee, but find so few, and thy homes thus too destroyed. Thou canst another build, I say, but in truth it cannot be, for thou can only one kind build, hast not the choice as me. Man can want and suit his needs, so need a room for thee, I say, and in his house included be. For what is every living creature unto another but another way to see? Shall man's eyes be blinded? I pray it will not be. For in thy hour of need, I know I alone cannot save thee. So take this soldier in thy wings, fair falcon, and fly away. Show me what thy sharp eyes see, that I may teach my fellow man and keep thee here with me. If come the day thou be no more, it shall to man thus prove that one day too his time will come to answer all that he has done and miss forever what he had to look upon. In Emerson's essay on nature, the poet communicates a pleasure mixed with awe. By a few strokes, he delineates, as on air, the sun, the mountains, the camp, the city, the hero, the maiden, no different from what we know them, but only lifted from the ground and afloat before the eye. He unfixes the land and sea and makes them revolve around the axis of his primary thought and disposes them anew. I was thinking of how we begin our poetic journey with nursery rhymes. Jack and Jill went up the hill to fetch a pail of water. Jack fell down and broke his crown, and Jill came tumbling after. Being a mountain climber, this is an important message. Don't fall. But there's something a little more amazing up that hill. Is it the challenge of the climb? The stillness of billions of stars overhead? Or is it standing on top of the world? Higher ground. To higher ground, I heard him say, as the river began to rise. What once had been calm waters changed before my eyes. Raging rivers, raging men, how easy swept away, caught up in the turmoil of the chaos of the day. To higher ground, I heard him say, see the view from there. As I looked what lay below, the scene became more clear. Beyond the raging river, beyond the mountaintop, no higher ground lay around, yet the climbing didn't stop. To higher ground, I heard him say, to find the sacred ways. For once you've been to higher ground, your spirit soars with change. Step by step, keep rising up, symbolic in our mind. Climb and climb with greater thought, to the highest ground you'll find. Emerson tells us, the effect of conversation with the beauty of the soul is to beget a desire and need to impart to others the same knowledge and love. If utterance is denied, the thought is like a burden on the man. Always the seer is the sayer. Somehow his dream is told. Somehow he publishes it with solemn joy. Sometimes with pencil on canvas. Sometimes with chisel on stone. Sometimes in towers and aisles of granite, sometimes in anthems of indefinite music, but clearest and most permanent in words. The next poem I'm going to read is the first poem for which I received an award. It's written as a dialogue. The Lost One. I am lost. Although you cannot see me, hear me, I am with you. How shall I ever find my way? Seek me, and I will show you. Some have said to go this way, some that. Who do I believe? Believe in me. I am scared. I will comfort and protect you. And cold. I will keep you warm. And hungry. With me you shall not have hunger. It is too far. How can I make it? Take my hand, I will help you. Can't anyone hear me, help me? I can, but are you listening? Oh, where is the way, how will I know? With me you shall know all things. I don't want to be here. Find the way, and you can be with me. In his essay, The Oversoul, Emerson writes, give us a strain of poetry or a profound sentence, and we are refreshed. Or produce a volume of Plato or Shakespeare, and instantly we come to a feeling of longevity. See how the deep divine thought reduces centuries and millenniums and makes itself present through all ages. The last poem I'm going to read is a nod to Shakespeare. It is my first and only sonnet. Sonnet 1. Think not upon what in life's acquired, or live the day immersed in life's past loss. The story's lows, least to be desired. Life's journey takes whatever it will cost. Each day a sum divided from the plan. A portion dealt to thee is game of cards. So play with skill to full extent the hand. Time shall bring to face the ace of hearts. Labor through the day to seek what's got, not idle, lost, and inclined to pass the blame. What's life but learn to find what life is not, or perish as began but never changed. Problems and solutions all partake, for life is absolutely what you make. In his essay on the poet, Emerson writes, for poetry was all written before time was, and whenever we are so finely organized that we can penetrate into that region where the air is music, we hear those primal warblings and attempt to write them down. And these transcripts, though imperfect, become the songs of nations. Thank you.
think we have time for questions, comments. Raise your hand and I'll try and get around to everyone. I know we have poets in the audience. All of us, right?
Thank you. It's really wonderful to hear not only poetry, but to hear it in the context of someone who is well known to all of us. And thank you for that. I'm thinking often when I hear poetry read of the first Deopsalmata of Kierkegaard, which I can't recite in total, but goes along the lines that, what is a poet? Oh, sorry, I'll have to use the masculine pronoun here. It is a man whose soul is tortured, but whose lips are shaped so that when he utters his cries, it sounds to us as beautiful music. And then it goes on from there. And I'm wondering, do you relate at all to that idea?
Well, I don't know about the torture part. I mean, life has a lot of pain and suffering and things that you have to go through and figure out. And a lot of my poetry does come from what I went through. But I don't know if I would call it torture. I guess I'd just call it life.
Thank you very much. It was very inspiring. And you mentioned a poetry group. Is that still going on? I'm curious. And where?
Jennifer and I are talking about trying to get a poetry group together. We haven't gotten too far on it. Yeah. Yeah. We'll keep everybody posted. Do you write poetry? Okay.
Thank you so much, Julianne. That was just wonderful.
Thank you. My heart was racing.
I wanted to just... I brought this little quote from Gustave Flaubert, okay. Which it just speaks all the truth in the world. There is not a particle of life that does not have poetry within it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I have a bunch of questions. You started writing when you were about 20, you mm-hmm. said. Was this something that was spurred on by a class you took, or just it just started out?
Actually, I was a math major in college, and then I fell in love, mm-hmm. and that did it.
Ah, okay.
That opened up the other half of the brain.
Gotcha. Well, that makes mm-hmm. all the sense in the world, doesn't it?
So I blame it on love.
Yeah, and... And do you specifically have a particular poet that you just think is the greatest, or has that changed over the years?
Oh gosh. I can't answer that one right off. Sorry. I can't think of anything that comes. I read a little bit of everybody. Yeah.
Thank you so much for reading. What I liked most was the way that you use rhyme, mm-hmm. internally and externally, both mm-hmm. as active rhyme, hard rhyme, I think, and soft rhyme. The way you had a poem that had some archaic language in it,
mm-hmm.
and you used it absolutely beautifully. And I think that's very, very hard to do.
And I never took a poetry writing class.
Well, you did it really, yeah, really beautifully, and thank you for your sonnet.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I remember way back, I don't know if anybody remembers Penny Avila. She was a Portland poet, and I was starting to do readings and things like that, and I was so excited. I took my work to her because she was well-known, and she read it, and she said, "You've got to quit using old language like that." And I said, "But that's the way it comes out." And I was so disappointed when she said that. It kind of broke my heart. And so I still did what I felt, but how it came out. But I was disappointed.
If Rachel Kester were here, she would like this. She always said, "Poetry has to rhyme." She was quite adamant about it. When I was in school, we had to memorize poems every year. And I'll always remember we were supposed to memorize Daffodils. And I thought that was the silliest poem. So I memorized Invictus instead. And then I did a poem about daffodils.
Yeah.
I thought of that as soon as you did it. Other comments?
I've been writing poetry since I was about 15 years old, and I have four that I think are good over all of that time. And when I think about those four poems that I think are good, I realize they were ones that just flashed full-blown, full-grown from my head, and I rushed to write them down in 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. It's like, where did that come from? You got any ideas?
I've had that experience, too. I think my longest poem, which came up to like 444 words, pretty much came out in one writing. So there's something else going on in the universe that you get plugged into. I don't know how to explain it, but they pretty much almost come finished out of my brain, just like that. Yeah.
Now, my son has written lots of poetry, and the amazing thing to me is he writes about things that he doesn't know anything about. But it came from within somewhere. Mm-hmm. And it was like, how did you know that?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
There must be a portal there somewhere.
I just feel this all came out in so concentrated. I mean, it's like we've had a very heavy meal here that it's going to take a while to digest. And it makes me want to sit down at leisure and look at some of these things more. Like, do you have a website where we can see some of these things?
No,
they're books.
Don't. But I do. I did bring some copies that I printed up a long time ago. And
Okay, thank you very much.